Basement with Matt Williamson and Ryan McDowell.
Welcome to another edition of the Dynasty Blueprint. I'm your host, Ryan McDowell. I'm joined, as always, by Matt Williamson. Matt, the regular season has come to an end. The playoffs are here. The fantasy season is over. I'm ready for the Dynasty offseason. What about you?
Yeah, I got to say, I'm pretty excited, not only for the playoffs. I'm excited to not talk about the Browns and Bears and Jags and all those teams week to week and get a little bit out of the monotony that becomes my life, you know, for 17 weeks in a row. It's really Groundhog Day week after week. So this week will be fun and new. And then from our perspective, we can start focusing on the Bears and Browns and teams that might be picking guys to fix and off seasons. And I got to say, as much as I love watching football, my strength, in my opinion, and my one of my favorite things is analyzing the off season moves and why the strategy goes into it all. So I'm really excited to get into that stuff.
Yeah, it's a fun time of year. We're going to be talking a ton over the next few weeks about the 2017 rookie draft, and we've already tackled that a little bit, and there'll be much more to come. Today, though, we're actually going to talk about, I think most people consider this maybe the best part of Dynasty fantasy football, and that is making trades. Matt, in fact, as soon as we logged on here to see each other, you pulled off a trade. What was that one?
I think it's in Dwayne's honor, to be honest with you. I mean, because an email popped up as I'm signing into our Google Hangout, and I was offered Terrell Pryor straight up for Isaiah Crowell. And I ran it by you. I was doing it with or without you, but I ran it by you. I'm like, I have to hit accept on this, right? And you're like, you got to hit accept by this. And then Dwayne signed on. I told him, he's like, oh, yeah, it's a no-brainer. So that was the easiest trade in history. It's just one of those ones that pop up. You hit accept, you move on, and you say thank you very much.
Yeah, some deals like that, you don't even try to push for more. You just take it at face value and walk away happy.
And I'm psyched to talk trades, and I'm sure Dwayne does this all the time too, but often if a trade like that comes up, I send it back and like throw in a third-round pick, and they always say yes. But this one, I just wanted to, boom, I'll take it. Take it and run.
Matt, you've already mentioned our guest a little bit. We do have Dwayne Brown. Dwayne is a writer with me over at DLF. He's also very active on Twitter. One of my favorite follows on there. And if you already follow Dwayne, you know that he is known for making dynasty trades and making a lot of them. So, Dwayne, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks, Ryan. Thanks, Matt.
So, Dwayne, we were talking a little bit earlier this week. And like I said, I know just from following you and from having some interactions with you, I knew you made a bunch of dynasty trades each and every year. And in fact, I think upon your last count, you were well over 150 dynasty trades this past season.
Yeah.
So what I didn't know, though, is how many leagues you played in. Some of these crazy dynasty owners, myself included, play in 10 or 15 or 20 dynasty leagues. And if you're making 150 trades across that number of leagues, you know, that's reasonable. That makes sense. I think it would still be on the high number. But I just found out you play in, what, five or six dynasty leagues?
Yeah, it's I trade a lot.
So you get these 150, 160, whatever it was, trades across just five leagues. And I guess my first question is, why do you make so many trades? Obviously, it is a fun part of Dynasty, but what compels you to make so many trades across your leagues?
I think it's a fear of missing an opportunity to react. In the off season, everybody gets really excited about youth and building and the potential of a player. But as soon as things start happening, players fail, players succeed, there's injuries, there's everything. And if you can react quickly enough, people's values haven't caught on yet. Kind of these windows, like you watch Todd Gurley versus San Francisco do nothing. Then week two, he does nothing. Right then I was like, okay, like this defense didn't look good to me when I watched them. It's time to move now. So I moved all my Todd Gurley shares. I was like, this could be a bad thing or this could be a good thing. It's dynasty. If you make a lot of trades, if you make mistakes, like say Todd Gurley were to come back, I moved people I trusted, Le'Veon Bell, David Johnson, Ezekiel Elliott. That was it. And I think one share, I think that was it. But I always move someone I trust who's failing or showing the possibility for failing for somebody I trust more. Le'Veon Bell was kind of sketchy, but I'm always trying to gain trust in the roster that I put out.
I think that makes a lot of sense. One, you know, one thing that I think a lot of people deal with, and I have, you know, I have Gurley on one of my rosters, and even seeing him struggle and getting to the point where I wasn't even starting him on a week-to-week basis, I still didn't necessarily shop him because I'm thinking, you know, 2017, he could live up to those expectations. 2018, you know, he could still be a top three, top five running back. So I don't want to miss out on that. But I guess when you make so many trades, you know, you can just have the mindset of when that happens, I'll trade back for him. Is that kind of how you view things?
That's exactly it. If you trade a lot, your mistakes are limited. If something happens, you can bail out really quickly because my whole goal is to set up a core of players that I can rely on to start. Everything else is just bouncing around values. Like underneath, I have my core starters. Underneath, I'm just bouncing like constantly. I think in one league last year, I made 60 trades, but I ran 8 of the same 10 starters all year. So it was just to gain values.
So do you feel – I think we should share a brain on this, and you're more active than I am. I do think Dynasty favors the active owners much more so than redraft or anything. I mean, the active owners, to me, get the worm. But I kind of look at it from this perspective, and if I make 100 trades and I lose some, I win some. But if I win by an average of 1% – each trade, you know, every trade I make, I think I get a little something more. That's why I did it. And if I do that 100 times, I have a dollar, you know, 100 pennies eventually exactly. Equal a dollar.
Exactly.
Yeah. And a dollar is Ezekiel Elliott.
So Dwayne, you mentioned having a few players that on this one specific roster that you were able to maintain from week to week over the full season. Do you have players that you would consider, you know, I guess untouchable or untradeable?
No, I don't think anybody's untradeable. It's all about, I think once you say that, like, I'm not trading David Johnson. I'm not trading Aaron Rodgers. I'm not trading, you're not trading the, you've basically taken a redraft stance and saying, well, I'm in it for this year. But if a guy offers you enough, that next guy that comes along to be the next David Johnson, to be the next Le'Veon Bell, the Ezekiel Elliotts of the world, you could have them plus more, which allows you to get underneath your roster, underneath your starters, and build it back up. So everybody's tradable. If you love Odell Beckham, you can love Odell Beckham, but if somebody offers you...
Somebody loves him more. You've said a lot of good things, and I kind of look at it like kind of walking up a ladder, too, as if I can make these two trades to get me one more commodity that I know I can move the gym in my league because he loves the Bears or he loves Jordan Howard or something, you start to learn the players you're playing against his weaknesses really too, that there's a guy that this dude absolutely covets because it's his hometown or he thinks he's a superstar. If I can somehow pry him away from this other owner and then shop him to this guy, it might take me 4 deals to do it, but I'm going to win in the end.
Exactly. Exactly. You just play to what people want.
Right.
Best time to sell a player is when people want to buy a player.
All right. Let's dig into a few of your recent trades, Dwayne. I know, at least according to what you have shared on Twitter, you've already made 3 trades since the season wrapped up over the past week or so. The first one was you gave Mike Evans, which is obviously a hot commodity. He is a player that I think just about everyone would want to buy right now. You gave Mike Evans, you got Amari Cooper and the 1.03 rookie pick. So talk to us a little bit about that deal.
Well, I'm just a big Amari Cooper fan. I think he's kind of got Odell Quicks off the line. He's got a lot of movement. He's struggled a little bit getting the red zone targets, but I think there's a progression to be had there. And the 103 carries so much weight in the offseason. If I can get the 103, and I know I'm going to hit a waiver wire hard because I'm an active owner, and if I can package that up or I package Amari Cooper back up and go for Odell Beckham, like the only person that I have rated higher, why not do it?
Yeah, I love that deal for you.
And don't you kind of feel that as great as Evans is, and if you were in a, you know, if you were a startup, you might take him second or whatever. It's awful hard for his value to go up any more than it is right now.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, he's a sell high type of deal. And Cooper hasn't played very well lately, but I don't think any of us question his abilities or his situation.
Well, even that 1.03 rookie pick is going to end up, you know, by the time we're in the middle of the offseason, that's going to be a top 24 overall asset, would be my estimation. So I really like that deal for you. Your next one, you traded Le'Veon Bell and you acquired Rob Gronkowski and the 1.01 rookie pick.
Yeah, for me, this was just a no-brainer. Like, I love Bell. I think he's possibly the best back in the league. He's behind the great. But Rob Gronkowski, like, his value is going to fall, but the 101 isn't. And I was a little bit shallow in this league. I actually went undefeated in this league. It was my first startup league. It's a super flex where I went 16-0. So I ran the table. And I just wanted to get a little depth. I made a couple moves just to solidify a win. And I gave away a couple pieces to gain a little bit of age. But the more pieces I can get, I might end up trading down the first overall pick because it is a super flex league. There's a couple good quarterbacks coming out. And people love Fournette and Dalvin Cook and Corey Davis. So it was just all about building and keeping the – and I think that Rob Gronkowski's not done. Like, there's a lot of kind of misinformation out there that he had a fused spine and everything like that. Like, he's not done. He's still going to – his value's low now, which made him a great buy. But as soon as he's back on a field making catches, value comes back up. Everything comes back up.
That's an easy one for me. I mean – I don't think any of us would trade Bell for the 1-1, but by no means do I think that gap equals Rob Gronkowski either. I mean, even if Gronk only plays one or two more years, he's still going to catch 20 touchdowns and a two-year stretch. He's always going to be productive if he's on the field. He's an every week starter. Not to mention, and you kind of mentioned this, you kind of brought this up too. I mean, from now on, and as active as you are as a trader, you're going to get a lot more offers in your inbox for 1-1 than you are for Bell, too. You know, I mean, people are going to be pounding your door the more they find out about these guys for 1-1.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing about being an active owner. Like, when I say available, they know it's available. I'm not.
It's really available. Right.
It's really available. I'm ready to move. Like, send me offers because this will likely be moved for the best value, best offer I get. It doesn't matter if people don't have any fear of coming to me because I trade so much that they know that a rejection isn't personal. It's just, I'm just out there. They're going to see counter offers. They're going to see, and I do it in a kind way. Like I don't like just saying that was a terrible offer. There's no sense making a person feel bad that they took the time to try to formulate an offer. I know when I formulate offers, sometimes like I'm quick because I make so many of them. Sometimes I'm a little quick and I don't really think them out completely, but it's all about just moving and making your team league mates feel comfortable with moving with you.
That certainly makes sense. And we all have them. I'm sure there's a couple guys in my league where I'm like, I'm not even gonna bother off. I'm not even going to hit send on the offer because it's not worth it. You know, it's not going to go anywhere. He's not going to do anything in response. Where if you're the opposite, people are going to be hitting you hard.
And you want to get hit hard. That's how you make trades.
Oh, that's great. And which makes it fun, too.
Yeah, there's always that little moment of excitement when you get a trade offer. And then, you know, I think for most of us, that goes nowhere. You know, it's a bad offer or whatever may be the case. You know, but for you, it sounds like you're more opportunistic about those things and explore those. Dwayne, your last trade of this brand new offseason was Michael Thomas, the 2.04 rookie pick, and the 2.12 rookie pick for DeAndre Hopkins. So obviously, you know, Hopkins had a disappointing season, but I take it that you still see him as a player to buy and specifically a player to buy low.
Yeah. Well, with Hopkins, I still believe strongly in his talent. I think ever since Jordy Nelson went down with the knee injury, Hopkins took over as the best boundary receiver in the game, even though he was getting, he wasn't producing at all. Like Will Fuller was getting a lot of targets at the start of the year, kind of drawing defenses. I just believe in the talent. And Michael Thomas, as great as Michael Thomas is, he's a hot commodity now. I love selling people when they're the hottest. I think Michael Thomas is going to be up there with, like, his ADP will probably sit next to Cooks in the offseason, I'm guessing. They're kind of going to range off each other. And then, but in actuality, I'm not sure. Like, I think Breeze can support both. Hopkins can take over games. I saw it with Savage. Like, he just kind of rebounded as soon as everything was coming together. And I just believe it's going to come back. Same with Allen Robinson, really.
See, I believe in Allen Robinson more than I do Hopkins. I think Allen Robinson is more gifted, is a more talented player. I think you made a good point that as soon as Osweiler came out of there, they peppered Hopkins with targets. I mean, I could foresee a scenario where that continues next year. But of your three deals, this is the one I disapprove of most. Yeah, I just think that Hopkins, this isn't one of my guys. I don't own him anywhere. I think he's a really good player, but I'm not even sure he's as talented as Michael Thomas in the real world. And maybe that's my scouting background that and I overlook the fantasy aspect and I look at it and say, man, I want the guy that jumps out of the gym and runs a 4.3. And Hopkins, to me, is a catch-point player and a very good one, but he's not a separation guy or a big play guy. And I like those 2 second-round picks, too. And I'm sure you could, trader. Definitely. Yeah, I mean, you're a trader. I'm sure you would gladly use them to package them into something else.
Yeah, see, that's part of the deal with me, too. Like, I have to make trades that people don't like, because it keeps the volume going. They'll be like, you lost that trade. I'm like, okay, I'm glad that you feel that I lost that trade. Make me another offer. Let's go. Because I probably lose 1 out of every 4 trades easily.
But that's fine.
But I win. And I trade much that it really doesn't matter.
I mean, it's like Vegas. I mean, you're not going to hit every game, but if you can beat the spread 55% of the time, you're winning.
Exactly.
Ryan, what do you think on that one? Then I want to tell people about our sponsor.
Yeah, I probably agree with you that was the closest one for me. Dwayne mentioned Thomas and his offseason ADP. We're just starting the January mock drafts at DLF. We're a couple, 2-3 rounds into those. And there's 6 drafts. I think Thomas has come off the board in the first round in 2 or 3 of those. Wow. So his value is really, really climbing. He's
ahead of Cooks.
In some cases, yes. Okay. Yeah, they're kind of flip flopped, and depending on which draft you look at. But I would agree, without really looking at the numbers yet, I would agree with Dwayne that they are going to be very similar as far as their ADP.
Yeah, I think so too, guys. I want to tell you about our sponsor, our buddies at Harry's. They got some new things going on. They've been supporting us now for several months. I've been using their product every day, and they've been fantastic because I have a really sensitive skin. I used to be an electric guy for that reason, but I've switched because of our sponsor, Harry's. They're fantastic. Their story is, for decades now, one big razor company's relentlessly increased prices and reaped immense profits at the expense of their customers. So Jeff and Andy, these are two buddies, they fed up and they're tired of getting ripped off, and so they started Harry's to fix shaving. Harry's knew there'd only be one way to ensure quality, so they bought their own factory. And by taking less profit and selling directly to you over the internet, Harry's offers their blades for half the price. Just $2 a blade compared to $4 a blade or more that you pay at the drugstore. It's a really good deal that they got going. And what do you get with Harry's? Harry's razors include everything you need for a close, comfortable shave. You get a weighted aerodynamic handle. It feels good in your hand. 5 precise engineered blades with a lubricating strip, trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, travel blade cover. And Harry's is so confident in the quality of their blades, they want you to try their shave set for free. You heard that right. Just cover shipping when you sign up. Plus, as a special offer to fans of our show, you go to harrys.com and you enter the code DYNASTY at checkout to get a positive shave balm. And also, they throw the shave balm in free just for putting DYNASTY. The balm feels great. So go to harrys.com, and the code is DYNASTY. Thanks again to Harry's. Good stuff.
Dwayne, let's look back now at some of your trades that you've completed over the past season. Again, we mentioned that there's, you know, between 150 and 200 of these transactions that you've made just across a handful of leagues. What are some of the deals that proved, we'll start out with some good news. What are some of the trades that proved to be your best trade, your best deals?
Well, there's a couple of them. I traded, I guess, early in the season when Will Fuller was blown up. I wasn't a Will Fuller fan. I thought he was kind of like a field stretcher, don't really know how to compare him. Philip Dorsett out of Indy type player, maybe with a little more dynamics to his game. But I wasn't a huge fan. I didn't think he was like a baller, as you'd call it. So I traded for Michael Thomas and Jordan Howard. That was a nice deal.
Wow.
That worked out well. Unfortunately, I ended up flipping Howard.
But still, you'd rather have Thomas and you'd rather have Thomas and Fuller, and whatever you got for Howard is gravy. So in the Fuller situation, did you just look at it like, boy, this guy's stock is flying after a couple of weeks and he's really not that good that I got to get rid of him?
Yeah, well, I kind of look at if efficiency is too good to be true, with Fuller, he was just taking off. Like, he was just skyrocketing, and he was getting a lot of targets. Hopkins looked bad. Everything kind of wasn't going well for Hopkins, and I was like, you know what? Fuller's just flying. I think me and Ryan actually moved him way up in our dynasty rankings, but I knew it was the time to sell him. Everybody was into it. And Michael Thomas hadn't done much. And I was like, you know, I kind of like this guy a little more. I like him more pre-draft. So I just rigged it, right?
Yeah, Fuller's probably one of my biggest regrets of the season. Dwayne, like you, I was not a fan. Across all my many leagues, I only ended up with one share. And that was in a rookie auction, which I kind of got caught holding the bag there and ended up with him on my roster. But then I totally bought in after those first 2 weeks. And like you said, I moved him way up my rankings. I went out and bought him in one league and tried to buy him in several others. So I guess, you know, that's a case where I didn't stick to my initial value on the player, my initial feelings on just his skills overall. And, you know, sometimes you have to reevaluate those things when players surprise us. But that's a case where it came back to bite me a little bit.
Dwayne, I'm curious, and I get like this, and I know sometimes it can be a weakness of mine. You know, if I self-scout myself as a dynasty owner and as a trader, sometimes I got a guy on my roster, and like Fuller's a perfect example. I own him nowhere. I never really liked him from the beginning, so I never ended up getting him, much like Ryan. But if I would have had him week two, week three, he would have been a hot potato. Like, I have to trade this guy. You know, I would have shopped him to everyone. And I get to that point sometimes where somebody just needs to go. Do you get like that too? Like, this guy's burning a hole. I know he has value. I got to get out. I got to move on from him.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, if a guy gets too hot, unless there's absolutely no market for the player, you have to move him. Like, I can't really think right off the bat on who got too hot for me to move other than Fuller. But
is Zeke too hot to move? I mean, is he somebody you have to move now because he's so crazy hot?
Oh, I'd move Zeke. Zeke just ran against the easiest schedule in the NFL. He's got the best offensive line. Dak Prescott, everybody's in love with him, but he wasn't really asked to do much. Why not move when it's the hottest? You got to get a lot for him, though.
Oh, it's hot.
You have to find that player that's willing to pay. Like, you need, because he's probably in the, I think Ryan tweeted out the ADP. I think he was in the top three or top two. I'd want a top eight asset plus. Why not?
And you'd probably get it from the right guy.
Exactly.
And Dak, to me, obviously won't get half as much, but I would move him now in a heartbeat. I mean, somebody's going to look at him and say, I'm going to start Dak Prescott for the next 12 years on my dynasty team. And, you know, you can go, man.
Like, I look at the teams that he actually played against with defense, like, that actually kind of drew stuff up against him. The Giants, and Dak's a good quarterback. Dallas could have won those games with Tony Romo in there. You bet.
Oh, yeah. I agree.
Let's look at the other side of the deal now, and some trades that maybe looked good at the time but did not work out well for you. Did you have any of those this year? I'm sure with so many trades, you had a few.
Oh, yeah. I kind of wrote this up the second part of the deal where I got Jordan Howard and Michael Thomas, because I kind of snowball deals. I was like, well, I'm not a huge fan of Jordan Howard. I think he'll be replaced. I don't think he really catches the ball that well. They'd probably look for more dynamic. I gave him away for 2 second rounders. It's not that 2 second rounders is a horrible return for any.
That's not awful, right?
Running back. It's not awful.
We all agree you lost, but that's not awful.
Yeah, but now I figure I could have gotten a mid first. Yeah, it was just a loss of value. But I do that. I lose value all the time by making quick deals like that, because I use those 2 second rounders again to package up for somebody else. That person's probably gone too. So,
do you kind of get this impression too? Like, I like moving guys quick. You know, if there's a hot guy on the waiver wire and I get the biggest bid and he comes to my team and somebody immediately offers me a second round pick for him, boom, gone. You know, I didn't even know you. Get out of here. Or, you know, you get a throw-in in a deal and he gets hot, or you pick somebody off waivers in the offseason and he gets hot. Like, I don't always look at it like what I have invested, but a lot of times I'm like, I'll just take a profit on this guy, get out, move on to the next deal. Maybe I get more if I time it perfectly, but sometimes it's just, you know, I'll just take it when I can.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. As soon as you pick him up and the guy making you an offer, that's free money right there.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, there's a couple of things that'll make me hold a guy. Just draft position, a change in or quarterback, because I may want to see what's going on and if his value will improve, but it's pretty rare. Like, even guys like Tyreek Hill, I picked him up and sold him right away across every one of my leagues.
I thought that's exactly what I would have done too. To me, his stock is as high as it'll ever be.
Dwayne, looking forward to this offseason, and obviously it's just beginning for Dynasty players, who are some players that you think you would probably be targeting over the next few months?
Everybody that's injured. Everybody that's
nice. Keenan Allen.
Yeah, Keenan Allen, Rob Gronkowski, Tyler Eifert. Everybody whose value took a hit. Dante Moncrief. If a player gets hurt, their value falls. When they get back on the field, their value climbs. I think it's the most concrete thing in fantasy football. Injury is going to cause a decline. Field play and production is going to cause an increase. So buy during a decline, or buy when the stats kind of lie. Like, I like to buy, this player was highly inefficient. And then you look in the context behind him and he faced like 9-man boxes or 10, and the quarterback sucked. Like, things like that change all the time. So you look in there and then you just kind of buy talent that's low. That's it. It doesn't matter who it's going to be. If it's a name and I can make a profit on them, that's all I'm going for.
One question to both of you, and Ryan, I think we talked about this early in the Dynasty Blueprint beginning stages, during right around free agency, or like I just made that deal Crowell for Pryor, and Pryor is going to be a free agent. Do you think it's a good time to buy free agents to be before they move, or is it a good time to sell them? I tend to think it's a good time to sell them. I mean, although I just bought one second ago, it just seems like that everyone's optimistic that Kenny Britt's going to end up in New England, or, you know, all these years, Alshon Jeffrey's going to go play with Drew Brees or something. Probably not going to happen.
I think a lot of times we can let Twitter tell that story and then just follow along, you know? So if that becomes the narrative that, yeah, Kenny Britt's going to New England and he's going to be a top 20 dynasty wide receiver again, then yeah, then you sell. But I think in a lot of cases, there are those impending free agents or players who could benefit from others leaving, who are looking to gain playing time, gain a larger role. And in some cases, they're underrated. They're not being talked about very much. So I think it just comes down to a specific
– that guy in that situation.
Right. It's not necessarily one blanket answer.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, personally, I tend to always look at a player's value exactly where he is and just assume he's going to stay and assume – but I let that, – that's just me personally. But I don't really care about me when I'm doing a dynasty league. I care about everybody else's opinion.
Right, right, me too. It's a good way of putting it.
If everybody's like, yeah, that guy's great, I'm like, yeah, that guy's great. Here, take him from me. Or that guy's terrible, yeah, you don't want him. Like, everybody doesn't want him. I should take him.
Especially, like, with throw-in guys. Like, you have a pretty good deal set up, and it's like – throw in that guy you hate. I mean, nobody wants him anyways. I'll probably cut him in a week.
Nobody wants that guy you hate.
So, Dwayne, who are some players that you would be selling in the coming months?
I'd probably be selling Dak Prescott, Ezekiel Elliott, Tyreek Hill, if I owned any of Tyreek Hill. Mm-hmm. I'd sell anybody that anybody really wants to buy. If you're excited, you should come see me because I'll sell them. Yeah. It's just all about return. I'm not really focused on selling any player off my roster. You have to want them, because if you're just fire sailing people and being like, you know, I'm not a big fan of anybody, Adam Thielen, say, I'm not a huge fan of Adam Thielen. I think he's done well in the situation he's been given, but I think that'll change next year. And you're low on a player, don't sell them because you're low on a player. That won't make your profit. Sell them when people like them.
You mentioned Thielen. Is a guy like Treadwell on your radar now then as a buy low?
It's so tough. Like, there's draft stock, but you look at the list of players that didn't produce year one and couldn't even get on a field, and it's so small. What, Chris Carter? And
Vincent Jackson.
I can't really think of any. Yeah, Vincent Jackson.
He went to a tiny school, and Chris Carter was a supplemental pick. I mean, they weren't exactly first-round picks coming out either.
No, so it's kind of tough. Like, I loved Cody Latimer coming out. I thought Cody Latimer was like – I thought he was like a Jordan Matthews 2.0 type player. Sometimes the brain isn't there that keeps up with the NFL. It doesn't mean the talent isn't there. The playbook confuses a person. Sometimes the coach doesn't gel well. There's a lot of context behind what we can't see and what we don't know that makes these things hugely risky to actually invest in them. Said, if somebody's throwing me them for cheap.
Dwayne, you've mentioned this or alluded to this a couple of times. Do you have that, I guess, that stock market mentality of you feel like you have to sell a player whenever he is at his highest value, whatever you determine that to be? Or are there some cases where, you know, Julio Jones, his value is never going to be higher than it is right now. It's going downhill from here, but I need him to win this championship, so you keep him. What are your thoughts on that situation?
I'll sell anybody if their value is high enough. Problem, like, some people think their values can't get higher. Like, we saw Odell Beckham come out after that hamstring injury of his rookie year, and he lit the world on fire, and we're like, well, he's not going to get much higher. And this is the year Jordy Nelson was going off, like, and I'm like, I'm going to give you Jordy Nelson in the first for Odell Beckham. And everybody's like, no, you overpaid. This is like 3 weeks in. I'm like, this kid is special.
That's before Jordy's injury, and, you know, he was tearing it up.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody's like, oh, you overpaid. I'm like, well, this is one player that I believe I did not overpay. I'm going to wait And by the end of the year, he's the 1.01 in startups. Sometimes you roll the dice. And Jordy might have been my favorite receiver in the NFL at that time. And I still had to move him.
It's pretty gutsy. Dwayne, along those lines, the big trades that I've screwed up most are the ones where, boy, I really like this team. As usual, I got a lot of extra picks. Before the season starts, I'm going to go all in and buy somebody huge, and I'm going to win this league, and I'm going to be rich. And I remember doing it for Cordarrelle Patterson. I did it for Monte Ball. Like, every guy I picked and I did it with, I just screwed it up. And to me, that was maybe I'm just unlucky on those couple of deals, but it was like I was overly aggressive looking for that final piece. I was wondering if those were mistyped deals for you, too, in the past.
Well, I was lucky enough to avoid Cordarrelle Patterson. I kind of, running back, not a wide receiver. I avoided Justin Hunter that same year. But
yeah, I loved him too.
I bought into Monte Ball too, like crazy. So to be honest, I'm not a running back scout. I see things I love, and then I see things I hate. But I kind of go with the flow of the people more knowledgeable than me. I have to use the minds that are better than my own. There's an efficient market, I believe, for the dynasty world. But when you're talking about the Devontae Parkers, I'm not even saying Devontae Parker's a bust, but when you're talking about non-production in the second and third round, or even production that doesn't fit the mold of an NFL player to a standard type, I bail. I run away. That's why I'd run away from Tyreek Hill.
I was going to say that people are comparing Hill and Patterson quite a bit, both in their, you know, their dynamic play on the field as a weapon at multiple spots, you know, as return men and receivers and running the ball. But their dynasty value is doing the same thing. You know, Hill's going to end up probably as a fourth or fifth rounder in this month's ADP. And wow. I think he's the type of player who that hype builds and grows throughout the offseason. So, I mean, if you told me right now that in July Tyreek Hill was a second rounder, I wouldn't be shocked.
He's gonna grow like that. They'll be like, oh, he's fast. Look at his vision on these punt returns. I don't care about a punt return. I want to see this guy make wide receiver plays. If he's going to be a running back or an offensive weapon or the next Tavon Austin, who, show me it. Just don't show me amazing football plays for a team that don't translate to fantasy long term.
Yeah, but I look at Hill, and yeah, he's great. He's explosive. He is developing as a wide receiver. You'll see him run, you know, corner routes and posts and things like that. But how many of those type of players have kept it up? I mean, Devin Hester was as explosive as anyone. They couldn't keep him on the field. I mean, maybe he's more Percy Harvin than he is Devin Hester, but a lot of those guys get injured, speaking of Percy Harvin. And, quote, gimmicky, quote, space players don't work in the NFL like they do in the college level. Not to mention, this is as explosive as he'll ever be. And when he rolls an ankle in week four next year and does and only returns 97% or takes, you know, a bunch more big hits in his career, and he's slightly less explosive, then he's going to start taking a lot more hits. And all of a sudden, you know, the bloom's off the road.
Yeah, then he's Jacoby Jones.
Right.
Dwayne, what about rookie picks? How do you value those, especially in this offseason period? I think it's fair to say, you know, we all are pretty comfortable in saying that those rookie picks are gaining value every day. As we get closer to your league's rookie draft, they're getting more and more valuable. Are you in general waiting to sell those? Is there a certain time where you're pouncing? Are you buying those picks now, or do you think it's too late?
I'm always waiting for the right offer. The value climbs with the combine comes out, value climbs, you get the spike, and then everybody on Twitter is talking, right? And you got nothing really else to talk about. So you're like, hey, I kind of want to, you know, it's fun with my dynasty team. That's where I kind of avoid buying rookie picks. The only time that I really try to buy rookie picks, like 2018 picks, I'd be buying them the day, like before the 2017 rookie draft. Like as soon as MFL rolls over and those picks appear, that's when I'm trying to get them. That's when they're at their lowest. People's all, I'm so focused on 2017. That I'm buying them at their lowest point, their highest point. So I'm waiting. I don't believe that the absolute peak is during the rookie draft as people do. I think there can actually be a fall after the combine when people are like, well, he didn't perform that well. There's where I get the right offer.
There certainly is that sweet spot where everyone's super excited about them and you haven't heard the warts yet about the incoming class.
Dwayne, let's talk a little, general trade strategy now. Do you find yourself, locking in on one player and then trying to acquire that player in every league? Or is it more of a case of team-by-team specifics or team makeup? How do you approach that?
It's league and – it's definitely league-specific. League and the owners that I play with, some have very – dramatically different views on players league to league compared to the consensus that we'd see on Twitter. So I really focus on, that's why I keep the league small. I really focus on what the owners are thinking rather than who I'm targeting. If there's a Washington, a guy who loves Washington players, I'm trying to kind of like, I'm not doing it right away and I'm not making it obvious, but he's getting offers with Washington players in there that he might think he's getting for free. But I'm really just looking to who you love and who you don't love and what's going to make a trade when I offer it to you, what's going to make it winning.
Art form. That's not easy to do.
So how are you doing that? I mean, a lot of times we might know, yeah, I'm in a league with this guy and he's a Redskins fan. But I guess what is the research that you're putting in to learn as much about the other owners as you can?
Well, MFL has transaction records. So I'm kind of looking at their waiver bid. Like I look at their who they've been bidding on, the type of player they've been bidding on. I go to their Twitter feed. If they're on Twitter, most people are on Twitter now. I go to their Twitter feed. I react to the games they're watching. A lot of people make time to watch that, the team they love. They'll tweet something about it, or they'll tweet like, Kirk Cousins is a top five quarterback. Oh, I just know you're Washington. And then I watch the trades that you make. I watch, I'll go to your transaction record. I'll read every trade you make. Everybody reveals something in their habits.
No doubt.
I reveal that I'm just like, if people were to go down and look at my transaction records, they'll be like, oh, this guy likes to.
He's rather active.
He's rather active. I'm rather active.
He's not trade averse.
There's days where I'm just sitting at home bored and I'll send every league mate that I'm in an offer. And some of them get four. I'll just go through your roster and I'll just be like, this is what it looks like you're trying to do. I'm going to send you an offer where you make progress to that goal, but I'm winning a little bit of value here.
Dwayne, you're in five leagues, right?
Yep.
I'm in seven, and I almost feel like I'm in two too many, that I can't be as active as I want to be because I don't have as good a grasp on my team. That I think there is a fine layer there where it's hard to keep up with them all. And I kind of am amazed how well Ryan does it.
Oh, I can't imagine.
Well, I mean, I'm in triple the leagues of Dwayne, but I've made, you know, a small percentage of the trades that he has. So, I've spread that out, but I'm not as active as, you know, as he is and maybe as you are, Matt, because it is, you know, it's taking that allotted time, whatever you have for fantasy, and it's spreading it out over 15 leagues. So,
it
makes a lot, it makes a lot of sense that narrow down those leagues, you can put a heavier focus, and then maybe you do get 100 trades done in those leagues.
I haven't said this for a while but to our audience, but Dwayne, you might get a kick out of this. And this is my favorite thing to do is, you know, you have all the tabs up on your browser. And I always have a My Fantasy League tab up, and all my leagues are through them. And I'll go for like a week or two, and I just camp out in Hyperactive 4 or whatever. And I just attack that league. And any unsuspecting soul comes walking into the lobby that day, I'm going to hit them with four trades because I know they're at least paying attention. You know, like I like to just sit there like a praying mantis as the prey goes by and just attack everyone I can.
Oh, Matt, you nailed it.
It's so much. Yeah, it's the best way to do it. Concentrate on one league at a time and crush it and then move to the next one.
Exactly. Get opportunistic.
Yeah, I do like that. I don't think that I do the camp out thing. Maybe I should, but I do like the idea of, you know, if I'm checking in on a league, maybe I'm just submitting a waiver claim or turning in my roster for that week or whatever. And if I see somebody else online, you know, and MFL shows that for most leagues, then yeah, you know, they're there. Take a chance to send them a trade offer.
Or just drum up a conversation. Hey, what are you looking for?
Right, right. So I think that's, you know, just a small thing that you can do that could lead to an increase in trade activity.
Just hit them up with a, hey, how you doing?
What do you want for Jordan Howard?
Dwayne, how does trading differ for you in the off season versus during the regular season?
Well, in the off season, people get enamored with potential, like enamored. It's so in the off season, I'm really trying to build little pockets of production that I think I might have missed out. Older folks for nothing, like nothing. Why, I don't get why people sell some older players for nothing when they can put points on your board. And then in season, that's the time to buy the potential that you can sell the next season for the production again, gaining value, snowballing, and just packaging that up.
I think that's a good point. That, I mean, veterans you can get for like nothing now, you know, once the season ends. You know, Jonathan Stewart, you know, I'm just throwing any name out. I mean, guys are still playing well.
But eventually these teams, there's 12 teams in a league normally, right?
Right.
Somebody's going to need that production. And they're going to send you more than you paid. Unless the risk with is that as soon as an injury pops up, you could be buying a dead asset. Like
Arian,
it's pretty
Foster.
Easy to for Arian Foster.
Right, right, right.
So there's risk involved, but I trade so much I have to mitigate my own risk. So
well, and a lot of times those players are so cheap that, you know, it's worth the risk. Right before the season started in one league, I was a contender, kind of weak at running back, as a lot of my teams are. And I sent 2/3 for Frank Gore and Arian Foster. So, you know, 6 weeks later, Arian Foster's off my team. He's retired and I've dumped him. But still, you know, I got a 1,000-yard runner in Frank Gore. I started him 2 or 3 or 4 times. And I think that worked out pretty well, probably for both of us. You know, the other guy was looking to get rid of that, those older players, stockpile some picks. So those are the types of deals that can work for both parties.
Gore is a perfect example. I mean, he might be the starter still next year.
Oh, man.
I mean, it's crazy. I mean, this guy never dies.
Dwayne, have you found that it's better to target certain sets of players at a specific time? I guess I'm thinking you could think about, again, veterans. You kind of alluded to that already. You said buying potential in season and buying production during the off season. What about positions? Is there any pattern that you've noticed there?
Absolutely. Especially you, Ryan, you noticed you were in a bunch of leagues and you noticed a big change when you started to go wide receiver heavy, right? Like, because running back fluctuates a lot. So everybody got on board with that. Zero running backs started up last year. So I started buying running backs. They're cheap. You had that variance of zero running back. The reason that it worked sound, it just didn't work this year. So now people are back. Oh, I'm going to buy some running backs. I'm going to sell some running backs. It's all about value, right? Like, if you don't want a player, I'm going to grab them. And yeah, so now there's like the zero everything crowd, and there's too many crowds for me to keep up, really.
Dwayne, when you're formulating an offer, and this is the topic that I've seen wide variety of answers and strategies. But when you're ready to send that offer, are you sending your best offer, you know, from the start? Is there some wiggle room there? I've even seen some people advise sending a bad offer just to see if the other person bites. I don't know if I would be on board with that strategy, but what is your plan of attack with that?
I send my best offer minus a fourth round pick.
Wow.
So I'm always...
That's less of a margin than I would
yeah,
do.
It's, yeah. Yeah, I send everything I got because I want you to know that, like, this is... I believe that you can win this deal. And if he says... I don't want him to come back and say, no, that's a terrible offer. Oh, that's the best offer I've gotten for this guy. I want you to consider it.
And put you at the top of the list.
Be like, yeah, they'd be like, well, you're the first guy I'm going to come to if I decide to sell this guy. Because some people hold. And I'll be like, well, I'm kind of maxed out. But, you know, like, if you need something, I'll toss you a fourth. Just to, because some people need that crazy bump, right? Like, I don't know why, but some people need it. So I'll usually collect a bunch of fourths and just make them, like, petty cash.
Never use the picks and just throw them in.
So does that mindset result in you not having, I guess, a lot of back and forth negotiations? Is it the case where you make the offer and it's either an accept or reject and then you move on? Or do you still have a lot of that back and forth, you know, emails and offers and counter offers? And
Yeah. I send my best offers. Sometimes it's just flat rejected. That's when people don't put the comments in. If somebody comments, I'll usually send them back one email. Like, not just, oh, thanks, I appreciate your telling me what you were thinking on this, just to value it. I'll usually just kind of put that in mental bank. But sometimes they'll just go back and forth. But most times my offers, I'd say it's one out of every 50, the email back and forth. Other than that, it's accept or reject.
What about dynasty owners who are in leagues where there aren't many trades? There's a low trade activity. What would be your advice in that situation?
Send out 100 trade offers.
Just pelt them, huh?
Send them. Just hammer that league. Destroy it. Light up the message board. Do everything you can to get owners to log in. And make sure if you MFL, which you should, everybody should have MFL. You want to see who's there and who's not. If a guy goes too long, I'm sending him offers. I'm shooting him messages. I'm being like, hey, I might even shoot him a message, say, hey, everything okay? You good? And I know that things come up, right? But hey, doing my best. That's all you can do. You can't spam a league, be like, hey, this league sucks. This league's dead. To keep plugging, it's mostly up to you.
Dwayne, I'm sure you've gotten this before, and I have on a couple of occasions, but when sending an offer, have you ever gotten rejected with the reasoning of, you know something I don't know? Whether it's because you're the most active owner in the league or, you know, you're a writer for a fantasy football site. Is there ever that, you know, why do you want this player? What's going on here? What am I missing out? Have you seen that? And if so, how do you deal with that?
I've actually gotten this quite a bit, saying that your team's too stacked. I've got a couple of really good teams. Your team's too stacked. I'm losing this deal. I'm not sure how. Send them a Google. I'll send them a Google search for that player. And then I'll send them a Twitter search. And I'll be like, I'm not a sideline reporter. This is everything I read. This is on Twitter a lot. Sure, I'm active. I'm just going to give you the ability to see exactly what I see. The fact that I'm active mean I'm better than you at all. It just means I'm active. And there's tons of horrible players who just constantly stay online. I want you to have every advantage that I have. I don't want to screw you. because I want to, I want you to come back to me all the time. Like, I'm an active trader. I rely on you. I want you to know what I know. This really helps my team, and this might help your team too.
Yeah, that's not an easy process. What about along those same lines? What about folks who say they don't want to make a trade with you because you always win trades? Is there that, I guess, that sense of intimidation there?
I lose trades sometimes on purpose. I make so many that I know I can afford to lose a bad player, a player that I don't really believe in, or a player I believe in a little less. Flying off my roster in 3 weeks anyways, I'll lose that, and I'll lose it on purpose. And some players might be like, oh, that guy stayed on my roster. I'm like, well, I'm glad that he stayed on your roster. Put him in a lineup against me, and I'm going to work him. But you won that deal, sure. You might have got a late third-round pick out of value out of it, but I've won enough trades that I can keep going.
I guess the whole conversation of winning and losing a trade is interesting. Like going back to your earlier Jordy and a first for Beckham trade, you know, after we had seen just a few weeks of Odell, do you think you won that trade or did you lose it because you overpaid?
I made a good trade. I don't know if I won it. I don't know if I won it at that time because winning is all about like the value who stays on the roster the longest and what you've done for your squad. And I just think I made it helped me in the long term win. I think that guy won the trade at that time. And that's okay. I was okay with losing it.
Right. I mean, you got Beckham. It looks like a great trade now, you know, but at the time, you think maybe, you know, maybe it could have been Jordy in a late second instead of a mid first or something like that.
Absolutely.
You have to be willing to make those kind of moves if you believe in the player. And like you said, being willing to lose a trade sometimes is the necessity as well. Dwayne, thanks for joining us today. You've been great. Lots of great information about Dynasty Trades. I'm going to go make some offers right now.
Yeah, I'm in the mood.
Before we do that, though, Dwayne, just tell our listeners where they can find your work.
I'm at DLF, of course, Dynasty League Football. I'm ranking there. You can find me on Twitter, at DwayneB13. And I hope to put out some good information for you off season. I'll be coming out with a Tradeaholic. I'm going to document every one of my trades this year so everybody can look back and either laugh at me or be like, hey, this guy might be onto something.
I love it. That's a great idea for an article, Dwayne.
It's already started.
All right. Thanks to Dwayne. We'll be back next time with more Dynasty Blueprint.